Can't sell it anywhere else, man. It's right here in West Virginia.
This is the Community Podcast with Zach Beard and Aaron Marco, two Morgantown real estate agents highlighting the good people of our city and state. We're taking you behind the sign, connecting interesting people, places, and faces, why they do what they do, and how they came to be doing it. We're building a better community.
Today, we're really lucky. We got Steve Finn from the Chestnut Mountain Ranch. They do such a great job here in our community. I'm really excited to have this opportunity to talk to you a little bit this morning. Steve, welcome to the Community Podcast.
Thank you, Aaron.
Yeah, thanks for taking time.
Yeah, so Steve Finn from the Chestnut Mountain Ranch, and you are the founder of this?
Founder, executive director, fundraiser.
Yeah, you're wearing all the hats, is what you say. You're wearing all the hats. That's what you do. That's great. Well, you guys have been absolutely, I mean, from all metrics from the outside looking in, it looks like you have been wildly successful in the time that you've been here. If you wouldn't mind, just give us maybe a little trip back in history a little bit to when you guys founded this this endeavor here in Morgantown, and maybe a little bit of the history on the location.
So I'm originally from West Virginia. I was born over in Wetzel County, but my family roots on both my mom's side and my dad's side go way back, mid-1800s here in Mond County. And so, but my father passed away when I was young. My mom had to find work. We moved, I was 13 years old. We moved to Atlanta, Georgia. So I grew up in Atlanta, mid-80s on, latchkey kid, getting into all kinds of trouble. When I was about 20 years old, I turned my life around and I went from running from the cops to being one. So,
and you ended up in law enforcement.
I did.
That's where you spent the most of your career.
Yep. So next 12 years of my life was in, law enforcement in Metro Atlanta. Absolutely loved what I did.
What a tough job. That had to be a tough job, especially at that time period in a big city.
It was tough, but it was fun. Yeah. It was always full steam. We were, I was part of a special unit that we had the opportunity to get in and you want to say the cliche of make a difference, but we made a difference. We were cleaning up neighborhoods. We were, taking really, really bad people off the street. But during that time, I was seeing a lot of kids that we knew, because you get to know the bad guys, you get to know the kids that are in the gangs and kind of keep a running list of who's who. And I saw a lot of these kids get killed. I saw a lot of these kids go to jail for the remainder of their youth, you know, for some stupid decision on a Friday night.
Yeah.
And so, naturally, my wife and I just started these what-if conversations. Like, what if we started doing more? What could we do? I had no idea. I didn't even have the concept of a children's home. I kind of had some idea in my head what one looked like, but it was more of what I was exposed to in law enforcement, like a juvenile detention facility where these kids would go in and get locked up for 4 to 6 months. Didn't really know or have any concept beyond that.
So if you're taking, you know, kids who are in troubled homes, you know, might be some risk from parents coming to find you too. Like, you know, what?
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds. Anytime you deal with family dynamics like that, you're getting into the garbage of generational stuff.
Yeah.
And it's not an easy, it's not a career that most people are attracted to. I mean, there's not a whole lot of profit in it, and there's not a whole lot of a glamour in it, but the payday is seeing these kids' lives turned around. So I was getting, I started getting tuned into what could be out there, you know, and my wife and I started exploring different children's programs. We're kind of keeping our eye on the horizon for possibly a career shift or even just a service opportunity. We weren't really sure what was going on. So we're in Atlanta. We're in the bus. You know, there's over a million people in our county alone. There's five metro counties around Atlanta. So there's around 6 million people that we're living with. And we're trying to figure out what's our next step in life. And then one afternoon, we were out to eat with our family, our little ones. My daughter was, you know, maybe three, and my son was just born. And I see a cop buddy of mine sitting across the restaurant that I hadn't seen in a while, because there's well over 1,000 officers in the county. And so he's walking out, and I said, "Hey Joe, which precinct are you at? I hadn't seen you in a while." And he said, "Oh man," he goes, "I left the department." He goes, "I'm working for this Christian Children's Home now up in North Georgia. You need to come check it out. It's called Eagle Ranch." And I said, yeah, I'll come check it out. So Didn't know a whole lot about Eagle Ranch. I kind of heard some things over the years that there was some kind of program up there, but I'd forgotten about it. So we, anyhow, my wife and I went up the next day, visited with Joe and his family. They were house parents, which was a new concept. And they were house parents in one of the children's homes on this 300-acre campus. And we saw something that we had never seen before. We were blown away by this, basically this sanctuary for children to get back on their feet, to experience a childhood, to discover their gifts. And you know, we went home that night and we just couldn't sleep. It was like, man, this is it. This is
excited about it.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, really excited. So we decided, you know what, let's put our application in and just see what happens. So we put our application in. Next thing I know, we were getting a job offer. I hung the badge up. My wife and I, we walked away from our careers and we just kind of drove off this cliff and we became house parents. Now, we were house parents to seven teenage boys. We committed to 3 years at Eagle Ranch. And we saw a program that worked. We saw kids turning their lives around. And when I was exposed to all these other programs in law enforcement, these kids were in and out of the system. It was just a revolving door. Nothing was really taking place in their heart or in their home. And we were probably changed as much or more than the boys that were living under our own roof. And now we had some tough kids because of my law enforcement background. They were shuffling the tougher ones into our house, you know.
Yeah.
And but all the same, we saw these kids turning it around.
How old were the kids?
They were mostly 14 to 17 in our house then.
That's a really tough age too, because you're kind of on that balance of figuring your own, you know, especially as a, you know, a young boy like that, you know, figuring out your status there.
Oh yeah.
Oh
yeah.
Man.
Yeah, and then boys will be boys, and they throw fists and
yeah.
But all in all, the program worked. Most of those boys turned their lives around. You know, generational curses were stopped. And so we started thinking, what's our next step? My wife and I, what are we going to do? What's up? What's going to be after house parenting? Is it going back to law enforcement? So this idea started stirring within us to start a similar program. My wife jumped in on it and she said, you know, let's go after this. And we looked around the country for the state with the highest need. We'd get the boys out the door to school in the morning. We'd get on the internet, do research. And what we kept coming up with was West Virginia, my birth state, had the highest need in the country and continues to kind of carry that blue ribbon in most categories. And so we...
What kind of metrics did you look at when you were analyzing that stuff?
You know, we were looking at foster rates. We were looking at dropout rates. We were looking at... addiction rates within adults, like all these family dynamics, all these juvenile statistics, and a lot, and some of that stuff has shifted over. I mean, that was 16 years ago, but for the most part, West Virginia's foster system continues to really struggle, and per capita, we're number one in the nation for the having the highest foster rates in the nation right now, and it just continues to get. So there's a lot of kids out there that still need help. But so 16 years ago.
What's fueling that high rate of foster?
It's addictions.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you just boil it down to it's addictions. It's families falling apart. Mm-hmm. Most of the kids that we see that come through Chestnut Mountain Ranch are either being raised by their grandparents or somebody else. About 90% of our children have a broken home. I think only 9% of the children that we've served over the last decade have both parents. So that kind of gives you an idea of just what's coming through our door.
Absolutely. Wow.
You know, these kids have wounds. They just want to be kids, but they have wounds, you know, and they push back and they act out and they do something stupid in class and they get kicked out of school and they land in front of a judge or whatever the case is, something's happened that they've required extra attention. And somebody has given them a Chestnut Mountain Ranch brochure along their journey and said, hey, you might want to check this place out. They can help.
You know, I want to take a step back just for a second because I think the human connection here, a lot of times we can talk about the actual organization and things right. that it's doing, but it's really the human connection that I find most intriguing. And, you know, a lot of people give a lot of lip service to service of this type. You know, hey, yes, I think this needs to be done. But to be motivated to the point of action like you have been, obviously, takes a special thing. And so I'm curious about your time in law enforcement, if there was any particular instant or instances that really codified you or said at that point in time that made that shift and made you so dedicated to this, or was it just the preponderance of your time overall that that instilled this desire in you?
Good question. So there was a number of moments those last few years that I was on that were getting my attention, particularly some young people that were killed. Mm-hmm. And I knew them, and there was just sad situations. If these kids had a stable home, they'd be here with us today. But they didn't, and they made poor decisions, and they never saw their 18th birthday. So there were some moments when some people at church challenged me to get more involved, and I kind of shied away because I wasn't sure. That's not for me, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm this tough cop. I don't want to really do that right now. But you know, over time, we started getting involved in just little ways. And sometimes it takes those baby steps to get the big steps. And somebody asked me one time. They said, "What was your very first act of service? Like, what did you guys do?" And I had to really think about it for a while. I had to kind of go back into the catalog of memories. And I was like, you know, I think it was changing diapers in the school, in the church nursery. I think that's where this whole thing got started. And I hated it. But I look back on those days, and somebody stood up on stage one Sunday morning and said, "Hey, we need help in the nursery." And my wife elbowed me, and I said, "I'm not going to do that." And so she said, "Why not?" And I said, "Well, that's because I don't do that." And so I didn't really have a good excuse. So we ended up doing that for about 2 years. But it was a step in that direction, and here we are today. Just one step at a time, but the ranch continues to grow and help more children in this area.
Because it seems from those early experiences, you can really kind of take two different paths. One is the path that you chose is just, hey, I see a need. I want to meet that need in a service towards other people, which I think certainly is in large part due to your Christian background. But the other side of that is a lot of people could just get jaded. They get cynical and they disconnect entirely from it. And then at that point, there's nothing but apathy on that side. And I see that, and I know several other law enforcement people that have been friends of mine over the years, and I see that. You know, it's just something that happens, and they have to disconnect emotionally because it's such a difficult job at many levels emotionally, or at least it has to be. You know, certainly I have never served in that way, but I can certainly empathize or sympathize with being in those situations.
Yeah, definitely. I've seen a lot of law enforcement over the years just get really jaded, and they're just looking for their retirement date. Fortunately, that did not happen in my journey, and I think I was probably got a softer heart than a harder heart.
Mm-hmm. Well, praise God for that. You know, I'll say that.
Yeah,
that's terrific.
So. Yeah.
Hey, let's take a break and check out this week's community moment.
Fairmont, make some noise out there. You guys ready?
Palatine Park is ready. They're ready to rock and roll all summer long. The best bands that are up and coming, local musicians, a diverse choice of talents. Palatine Park gives a perfect family-friendly atmosphere. All events are free to the public, so check out the event schedule to see what's coming up. See everyone this summer.
So let's talk about something. There's no better way to communicate your story than through video marketing. Whether you want to remember the celebration of a milestone or to reach potential customers for your business, video and photo just can't be beat. At Sparks Productions, we bring years of experience in creative storytelling to your project or event. We learn about you and what's important to you. And really, we just want to create an unforgettable experience with our clients. So give us a call and let Sparks Productions tell your story.
Moving right along. So you ended up coming back at some point. You decided West Virginia was the place that you were going to do this. You were going to come back home to do this. Probably could have done this anywhere in the world because the need exists all over the globe, but certainly in the United States. So you chose West Virginia as that home base?
Yeah. I can remember my wife at one point saying, you know, they got troubled kids in Florida. Why don't we go down there? And she was, you know, she was thinking, hey, if we're going to do this, why don't we go someplace where the weather's nice? And but we had done our research. West Virginia just kept coming up, and she decided she was going to, you know, be equally yoked in this venture. She said, "Let's do this. Let's do it for a year." We had some people from church that rallied around us, helped us build a business plan, kind of do a needs assessment for what was ahead of us. I didn't have a business background. I didn't have a public speaking background or fundraising background. I knew none of these things, but what I did know was that there was a need. I knew that from my law enforcement background, you can make a difference. You can get in the neighborhoods. You can clean things up. You just have to roll your sleeves up and go after it and surround yourself with people more qualified than you to get things done. It takes a team to get to clean up an area or make a difference or impact a child. So I had that that knowledge to roll forward with. And so we decided, you know, if God's in this thing, we're going to do it debt-free. We're going to move to West Virginia, one of the poorest states, and we are going to do this debt-free. We're going to give it 12 months. We had some things that we laid out. If nothing's moving within 12 months, we're going to pack up and go back to Atlanta. Mm-hmm. So we landed here in 2005 with a U-Haul full of stuff. We didn't really know anybody. Had a few relatives in the area, but you know, our mailing list at the time was basically my mom's Christmas card list. It was about 80 people, and there was no sugar daddies in the bunch. So not only were we doing this debt free, but we were, we didn't have a large Rolodex of where to go, how to get this thing launched. So the first year was often me getting up in the morning, going out and looking at properties, meeting with a realtor, looking around at different farms. But when it came to the time of somebody saying, yeah, I'll sell you my land, let's go to the bank. And I said, that's part of the deal. I've got to hold fast to this. I'm not going to go to the bank. This is part of my belief journey. If God's mm-hmm. in this, we're going to do this debt free. And if he's not, then I'll know it. There's no middle ground here. We're going to pack up and pull out. And so a lot of times it was, there's the door. Nice talking to you. Cause people were like, you're crazy. I mean, how are you going to get this money? I said, I don't know.
Isn't that the beautiful thing, though, of knowing whether God's in it or not, really? I mean, that's the beautiful thing of it.
Yeah, I mean, we just put it out there. We literally put everything on the line. All our chips were on the table. There was no gray area for God to be, well, who did this? Who really did this?
Yeah.
You know? And so, and often in a journey like this, he says, okay, big guy, you're going to, you want to do this, let's do this. And so he took us 12 months right to the last hour. There was a moment when we got down to $25 in our bank account. I can remember being down in Saberton. I pulled $20 out of the ATM at the BB&T down there across from Kroger, and my little ticker sheet said $25.54. And that's a scary moment. You know, we were getting down to the bare bones. Everything was falling apart. Couldn't find land. We were getting ready to pull out. I was starting to look at law enforcement jobs back in Atlanta. I knew I had to provide for my family. And I thought, okay, God, I made a big mistake. But he was taking us through something that I didn't expect. He was taking us through almost like a spiritual boot camp.
Mm-hmm.
Or a little police academy, if you will. You know?
Sure,
and, right.
And so we were getting down to our last bullet, getting ready to pull out, and I get a phone call one day. And I told my wife, I said, we're done, you know. And the phone rings, and this guy says, hey, I've got this property up on the Kingwood Pike. I heard about your vision. Why don't you come out here and meet with me? And I thought, man, that's kind of odd, you know. So I went out and met with this guy, and I told my wife as I was heading out the door, I said, this is it. This is the last property I'm looking at. And we went up and looked at this property, and he said, hey, I could sell this place tomorrow. I've got some developers looking at it. It's not far from Diamond Ridge Subdivision. It was a happening area at the time. And he said, but I like your vision. He said, I'm going to give you guys first dibs. And he goes, I'm kind of curious. I want to see if God's in this too. So I came home, and my wife said, you know, how was it? And I said, well, something different happened today, but I don't know really what it is. This guy's given us a chance to purchase the land. And she goes, what are you going to do? And I said, I don't know. I didn't even think this far down, you know. So we had, like I said, we had about 80 people on our list. And I decided, you know what? I'm not going to ask for money, but I'm going to let people know we found some property. So we put a letter together that basically described the land. You know, it's got ponds for fishing, trails, streams. I didn't say there was no roads, no no utilities. There's right. Nothing there.
No selective editing there.
Selective editing. But we mailed it out, and we watched this miracle unfold. The property was on the market for a little over $700,000. We're broke, and this miracle unfolded. I mean, we didn't realize, but people were watching us. Milan surprised us with a big gift. Some of the Atlanta Falcons players surprised us with gifts. Churches here, churches in Atlanta, these chunks started coming in, and we were just sitting back on our heels going, what's going on here? In about 9 weeks, we wrote a check for that property, and we had a $400 balance after the closing. Like, what just happened?
Yeah, that's amazing.
That is so, it's so amazing. I mean, it gives you chills. It's that amazing. I mean, it's one of those stories that just, if it doesn't touch you in some way, you're not fogging a mirror, you know.
I mean,
you're kind of checked out, you know. So that's absolutely incredible. So you purchased the property. You got in the property. Was there a house on it? Was there a facility that you could operate out of?
There was about a 20-year-old single wide trailer sitting at the front of the property, and I convinced my wife to move into it. I said it'll probably be about a year. Let's get in there. Let's start blazing a trail. We need to start cutting and doing, because there was no roads into the land.
Had to be totally reinvigorated at this point. I mean, so as we kind of follow the ebb and flow here a little bit,
right.
You're coming down to the wire. You're thinking this is really not going to happen at this point in time. You're making moves to close this chapter and move on. Then all of a sudden this just comes out like a lightning bolt. Okay. Now you're on this property. So you got to be pretty reinvigorated at this point.
Yeah. For about 3 days, I was on this emotional high. Like, what just happened?
Right.
You know, we're getting ready to pull stakes, and now we've got a mailbox on a piece of land. And then about 3 or 4 days into it, I can remember, like, this fear factor hit me, and I thought, what did I just do? Like, there's nothing here. I'm broke. I just spent all this other people money, and what did I do? I mean, what's my next play? I did, you know. So all these crazy things are going through your head, but slowly, we've never seen a giving season like that. It just poured in. And who gives to some guy who has nothing? Like, it's crazy to think about. Like, you would think it's more attractive, if you will, to raise money for a boys' home. It's tangible. We're down the road. It's a physical thing that, boys can live here. They can eat here. Yeah. I had absolutely nothing.
And from the sounds of it, some of the people that gave, maybe you didn't even write a letter to.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
They learned on their own.
They learned about it on their own.
Yeah. It's incredible.
And so there we were, and we started seeing people showing up, like mission teams, if you will. Corporations, Coca-Cola, bottling began to come in and help us. The story of what we did went out before us. We weren't selling. I wasn't writing letters and getting this thing published. It was leaking into meetings and people, hey, there's this guy in West Virginia. He must be crazy because da 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 da. And so, I'd have visits and I'd have people showing up and say, hey, we want to come up and help you clear the roads or raise a wall or whatever. And so we just started seeing this community support. We started seeing support abroad. And then the invitations to come and speak and share. And so it's been this organic, this like throwing a pebble into a pond. Mm-hmm. It's just been this slow ripple effect out, and people have.
How many did you ever find out, even any of these people who donated, did they have a story like, this was me in my youth and there was a guy like you, this is why I'm giving, anything like that ever? Yeah, because a lot of times, especially, players, things like that, they all, that's kind of, sometimes they come from that kind of family. Mm. And they had opportunities, somebody like you in their life.
Yeah, there were several accounts like that, but I can remember Mike Pushkar telling me once, he founded Mylan Pharmaceuticals along with Don Panos, and he told me a story about how he was very interested in what we were doing, because after his father passed away, his mother actually went to work for a Christian children's home up in Pennsylvania as a house mother. I didn't get a lot of the details, but I know she was on staff there, and she helped with girls in one of the girls' homes and helped cook and provide food. And that always intrigued him that his mother did that. And he talked to me about that. So when he heard about what we were doing, there was some interest that we're steering. And obviously he opened the door for that Milan gift. And
sure.
It came from the company itself. So, but we have, we've seen a lot of hands build this place. We've seen this miracle come out of the ground. We've held on to this debt-free model. We still have a ways to go. We want to ultimately have 7 boys' homes on the property, 7 boys per home. 49 boys is a good number. Our school that we've got on the property is now nationally accredited, and that the building that we built is big enough to easily educate 50 to 60 children. So we oversized it so we could grow into it.
So you came in and you moved into a single wide trailer that was 20 years old and probably not in great condition at this point in time, or not stellar condition anyway. Right. But then you started to build these various facilities on there. So how did that kind of ratchet up through the time period? Because you started in 2005, and here we are in 2022. So how fast did that growth take place that you were able to get these additional facilities on the property?
The first several years were very slow. So we moved here in 2005. In 2006, we're getting ready to pull out, and that's when the land purchase happened. There we are, broke. Okay, we're in the fall of 2006. We have the property, but we're broke again. So 2007, things starts picking back up. We start cutting the roads into the land. About 2008, we built a pavilion down on the front of the property. I remember we had a donor comes, and we had this like cartoon map drawn up that showed phase 1, 2, and 3 of what we wanted to build eventually. It was like a Disney map, if you will. And he, this guy says, "Hey, I want to do the pavilion." And I thought, man, I don't need a pavilion. I need a boys' home. Like, why would I build a pavilion? And I'm thinking, and the guy just was adamant, "I want to do the pavilion. I want to do this in honor of my grandparents." So we ended up building this pavilion. First thing that went up on the property, and this is how God often works. I could not see it. I thought this is a silly structure to put up right now when I don't even have kids out here. But as soon as we got that pavilion built, we started getting phone calls saying, "Hey, can we have our company picnic out there?" Or a church said, "Hey, can we come out there and do a fishing derby?" Or what? And then I started, if that pavilion wasn't there, mm-hmm. it would have not rallied the community. And instead of me trying to get out there and share the word, the people were coming to me, and I was able to share with them on the property again and again and again. That pavilion launched so much activity. And then we started, it was a few years we had, some curveballs thrown at us. And the first few years we got a letter from the fire marshal saying we had to sprinkle everything, and there was infrastructure there. Yeah. So we had to build a water system that took about 2 years to get in the ground, because there was nothing out there on that acreage. Water tanks over a mile of, 6-inch polyethylene lines, some fire hydrants. And so we had to go through all that exercise, but we got it done. And it set the stage for where we're at today, because now we've got this, basically this water system that runs through the property. So to answer your question, the first probably 6 years, we didn't have a kid on the property. We were just trying to cut roads, put infrastructure in, getting these curveballs thrown at us, trying to figure out, should we go through this door or that door? But once we pushed through and persevered, things started rolling. Kids showed up in 10 or 2011 was the first kids. And we had, we opened up with the school first, because the first boys' home wasn't done yet and our phones were ringing. Our school facility was ready to roll. So we decided, hey, let's start with some commuters. So we got a handful of boys in, and we started making a difference where we could, who could commute out there.
So who was the school servicing? Just members of the public that wanted to send their kids there? Yeah. Like a private school kind of setting?
Yeah, okay. Yep. Just like any private school here in Morgantown. We were registered as an exemption K private school. So we started as a private school for the first year and a half or so. And then we added the boarding component as the boys' homes came online and were built. So now we've got 3 homes. We have plans to build 4 more. We have got a match challenge going on right now from a foundation out of Ohio, and we are really close to meeting that match challenge, and that'll give us the financial means to build that 4th home. We'll probably break ground in July, if I'm guessing right. So we're gonna hit the gas on that.
Man, what a terrific story all the way. How many young men do you have staying on the property, and what is the approximate age range that you have staying there?
So we have 3 homes built, 7 boys per home. We have a capacity for 21 boys. I think we're around 18 or 19 kids right now, because we just opened that 3rd house, and we've got a couple beds that are vacant, but we're going to fill those pretty quick. Most of our kids are between 11 and 14 years old when they come in. Middle school age kids that have been in have had some level of trauma in their life, and they need help.
Yeah, they need love is what they need.
They need love.
Absolutely. Yeah. So there's a whole other component to all this, too. The ranch store and the ranch lube store.
Yeah. So, you know, let's go back to Georgia. So I'm the only thing I know in my brain is Eagle Ranch. And so I'm trying to use their playbook. Now, Eagle Ranch is in a very affluent area. There's like the neighborhood right next door to Eagle Ranch has 5 golf courses in it. There's just a lot of money around there. They do a golf event and bring in 6 figures. If we bring in 15,000 on our Don Nealon Classic that we hold every year, I'm very happy. Not only is it's money, but it also brings in connections and builds relationships. And so we continue to hold that, and we're happy to do it. But I realized early on, if we're going to build this debt free and continue to keep the lights turned on, we got to think outside the box. We got to try some new things. We got to figure out some. Eagle Ranch's playbook is not going to work for Chestnut Mountain Ranch. So one thing that we tried about 7 years ago, we opened up a thrift store downtown. One of our board members was the former president of Kroger. So you got a kind of a Mr. Retail guy on your board, and he's telling me, Steve, you got to try this thrift store. You got to build this thing, this out, what it should look like. And he was involved in starting some big thrift stores in Atlanta over the years for some other nonprofits. So I had some really good counsel being poured in.
Good talent right there.
Right. And so then we pulled in WVU School of Business. There was a group of master's level students that were doing their CAP project, and they grabbed this. There was 4 guys, and they grabbed this and did a study for us. They went to Atlanta. They visited other children's homes. They visited other thrift stores. And when they came back to us with their final, 50-page paper, they said, man, this is ripe. You guys need to open this store. So I think it was 8 years ago we opened the ranch community store, and it took off. Not only has it been a source of revenue for us, but it is it's been a place where we can teach vocational skills, work ethic, how to shake a hand, how to look somebody in the eye, how to save for your first car. We'll pay these young men. We'll get them on payroll, and they can earn the right to get down there. And behavior is good. Grades are good. Hey, why don't you take some time and go down there Friday and Saturday and get some hours in. So it's a training ground to launch these boys into their manhood, into their adult years.
That's exactly right. And it's showing so well. I mean, I go down to the ranch quick lube there in Saberton. Typically, I'm a guy that would like to change my own oil generally in my vehicles. And, I'd been down there, even if you go back 3 or 4 years, how long have you had the ranch quick lube now under your control?
So the thrift store has been 8 years. The quick lube has been 3.
Yeah. So about 4 years ago, I don't know what outfit was running it there, but those guys, I mean, I'd literally almost gotten a fist fight. Those people were so rude and just terrible, terrible to deal with. And then once I found out you guys had it, I said, you know what, that's well worth, going in and having the service done, So I went in, and these guys, every time I've been there, just exemplary, just polite, conscientious, just such great guys to deal with. And you guys are doing obviously just such a great job in teaching these young men how to be young men in the community. It's really, really outstanding.
Yeah, so we started thinking, like, what else could we do? We thought about opening a second thrift store, but there's a lot of moving parts. You got box trucks running around town. You got volunteers and people sorting and throwing away and recycling. There's just a lot of stuff. And I started thinking, what else could we do to be part of the business community here, generate funds, be a place for vocational teaching, and it'd be a good exposure point. So, and obviously we wanted to be profitable too for the ministry. So, and God just kept bringing my attention back to that quick lube. And I had a similar experience down there that got my, before we bought it, I had my oil changed and they didn't put the filter on right. And I ended up dumping all the oil out of my engine and almost blowing the engine. So, I finally figured out that this guy, out of state owned that, and he owned a number of them. And when we finally got in touch with him, he said, man, those guys are robbing me blind down there. It was too far away for him to really keep an eye on the business. And so I said, well, if you ever think about selling it, please give us some time to sit and talk. And goes, let's meet tomorrow. Oh, yeah. So we went. He was ready to unload it. He had already been thinking in his head, I gotta sell this place. And then he gets a cold call from us, and he was ready to move on it. So we shut it down for about 2 months. We gave the building a facelift. Valvoline came in, and you know, they did a study. They did a traffic car count study. They did a median household income and all these things. And they said their result was, you'll probably max out at about 35 cars a day, and that's very profitable. You guys need to do this. And so we launched it. People found out that it was more than just a quick lube. It all the proceeds go to the ranch, and people started coming from other counties. People started driving a little extra farther to come to us. And right now our daily car count is at 87.
Wow.
And it continues to go up. And I God bless those guys down there, because they are just hammered.
And they run them through. They run them through. I haven't had to wait. I mean, you think all those people, maybe it's going to take a long time down there, but I've yet for that to be the instance for me. It's always been a quick turnaround every time.
Yeah. Yeah. We try to keep people in their cars.
Yeah.
We give them a brochure, bottle of water, a friendly smile, and we get it done quick, because people, they want to get in and out. They want to keep their day moving. It kind of slows down a little bit sometimes when you're getting your tires rotated, but they can get that done with probably an extra 10 minutes.
Oh, wow. So they're doing tire rotations too. So, you know, it's not just oil changes.
We just added the tire rotation. We had to build some supports to put, we've got these quick lifts in the floor. It just gets your car off the ground just high enough to get the wheels off and rotated. Yeah. So
that's incredible. That's more than 10 changes an hour if you're doing an 8-hour day.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's
incredible.
It's happening down there. So, wow.
How many people are staffed down there?
There's at least a dozen, 15 guys down there, and girls.
Yeah.
At one point, we had 4 girls down there working. So Valvoline came back to us and said, whoa, what's going on here? You know, we want you guys to open a second one. So we just signed a lease on a building over off of University Town Center, bottom of the hill near the sheets and the car wash down there at the bottom. So it'll be open in about 8 weeks.
Amazing.
Yep.
Well, that's got plenty of traffic over there for sure. That should be a gangbusters location for you guys.
I know. We're almost worried it's going to hit us too hard.
I bet. I bet you are.
Do a soft opening.
Well, what a terrific story all the way around, man. It's absolutely awesome what you guys are doing. In regards to the school, real quick, so you're still taking outside people. Is that shut down now? Or?
Well, we were doing a mix of commuters and residents, and every once in a while now we'll have a commuter or somebody that is still needs the school but doesn't need the home anymore. They've gotten to the point where they've graduated the program. They've gone back home. Family reunification has been successful. These kids have gotten their lives turned around, but they may need another year in our school. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes jumping back into a big school setting can be distracting or hard for some children. And so the intimate school, the attention that we can give is unique. And so if we need to hang on to a child, we will. We've had kids that we have, we've even done the opposite. We've had kids that have lived at the ranch and stayed there another year, and they've gone to gone over to Trinity Christian for 10th, 11th, 12th grade. So we'll play each child's situation by ear. There's enough resources in this community that we can share, you know, the responsibility of these kids if they need to go here or there, go to MHS or Trinity or the ranch or whatever the case is.
But you do take them all the way up through graduation. You have that ability to graduate them out of 12th grade?
No, when I say graduation, that means graduation from the program.
Okay.
So we can take a kid through the 10th grade. The 11th and 12th grades, we have not added to our school yet, so we have relied on other areas like Trinity Christian or other areas that we can get those high school credits. I probably in the next few years will be able to add those grade levels too. But the most of the children, when they graduate our program, they are still in middle school or just about to enter high school. When I say graduate, they're graduating from Chestnut Mountain. They're not graduating from high school.
Right. So what constitutes a graduation in that regard? Is there a particular time frame that this takes place within? And once they do graduate the program, then where do they go typically?
So when we talk about graduation, we're talking about family reunification. We're talking about the ship has been turned around. These kids have figured out, I was created for a purpose. I've got a plan. I've got skills that I've got God-given gifts. I've got a direction on my compass now, and I'm going to chase this. And so, and the time frame is often about 2 years that they're at the ranch program before we have this graduation ceremony with their family. But everybody has to agree: the family members, the teachers, the house parents, the counselors, maybe their psychiatrist or psychologist that they were working with before they even came into the ranch. Everybody agrees, hey, it's time. It's time to launch this kid. And we do it right. We do a big ceremony down at the ponds with the family members. We give each child a sword. We give each child a Bible. The family members speak. They share their stories with other family members that are still in the program to encourage them. And
Steve, are those testimonials available online? Is there a place people could go? Do you record them? Or is it, you know, I know it's a very private kind of thing, but a lot of times people like to share that testimony and so forth. Is there a place that any of those are visible?
Yeah, we just had a brand new video shot, and it is on, or if it's not on our website today, it'll be on our website in the next few days. But Tony Caridi and his group filmed it just a few weeks ago, and they wrapped it up. So, yeah, there's some powerful testimonies on there.
It is. It's really something when you can hear the stories from the people that live the experience and how that transformation had taken place. I mean, it's one thing to hear it from you, certainly, but it's far more impactful to hear it to the people that have actually taken place and walked that journey. So
yeah, go check out that video. It's also on the Facebook page for Chestnut Mountain Ranch.
Well, we'll make sure that we have a link to it in this when we release this as well. Yeah, there'll be a link there as well. Zach, what do you got going on here?
I'm just curious, like you're talking about that end result, the graduation, you know, how many are down in adulthood and have they still stay in touch with you?
Yeah, most of these boys stay in touch with us through thick and thin. I mean, some of these kids, you know, you get the prodigal son situation where they get out, they want to try the world on for size, they fall flat on their can or something happens. But whether they're having success or bumps, they come back to us and they want to tell us about it. They want to lean into us. We've got a number of boys that have gone under the military. We've got our first boy that ever came onto the property, our first student, is now a police officer. We've got another young man that is going into the FBI training. He's going through the hiring process right now. We've got couple of boys that have gone on to WVU and are doing good, getting their college degree. We've got some boys that have gone on to trade school and learning how to run heavy machinery and become welders. And we've had a couple boys that have just made some really poor decisions, but they've come back to us. So people often ask me, define success. And what is your success rate? You know, and I have to go back to them, and I say, well, let's look at the word success. Like, how are we going to quantify it and measure it? Because every child's so different. Some of these kids are coming to us at age 15 years old, and they can barely read and write. They're still on a fourth grade reading and math level. What are we going to do to measure him up against a kid that's got a high IQ and is going to
right?
So every child's story is so different. Statistically, most of these children would be incarcerated either in their youth or into their early adult years. Statistically, if you look at it, the cards are stacked against them. But
sure, and we know once you get into that system, it's very difficult to get out. You know?
It is.
So you end up with a lifetime. And then ultimately, it turns into generational problems. So you're really breaking the link in the chain by doing this. These kids come from these you know, maybe generational bad decisions and breaking that link and allowing the future generations of their whole family to attain a totally different lifestyle.
Yeah, I often say I've never really left law enforcement. I'm just catching things on the front end.
On the front,
yeah.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Absolutely something.
Now, what an incredible story.
Well, I'll tell you what, guys, as we head towards the finish here, I'd like to ask you, so for the community that's going to be listening to this and so forth, how do they get involved? How do they get behind you and support you in the various ways? Obviously, the Quick Lube's available there and, you know, patronizing the ranch store and so forth. There's a way to do that, or donating. Are there other various ways they can contact you with cash contributions or to lend a hand in the building or maintenance process? How can people come alongside you, Steve?
You know, everybody from a child to an elderly adult has got a gift of something to give, whether it's prayer, whether it's cash, whether it's time, whether it's a meal prepared for a house mom and seven boys to give her a break. Whether it's there's a quilting club here in Morgantown. These little old ladies every year, they make quilts for the boys. You know, we all have skills and gifts. I mean, you can push a lawnmower, you can run a chainsaw. If you can swing a hammer and frame a wall, those are things that we can use at any level. We still use missions and volunteer groups just about at every corner, and we'll get you plugged in somewhere, whether you're volunteering at the thrift store. I mean, we've had little old ladies in wheelchairs that are wheelchair-bound down at the thrift store helping sort bags of clothes that are coming in, and they just they glow every day just beaming that they have a purpose and that they're part of something bigger than themselves. So there's things to get involved with, from the thrift store to the ranch. Just call us. We'll get you plugged in. We'll sit down and talk to you.
Now, Steve, you obviously wear many hats, obviously, as we've talked about the various roles that you play on the ranch, but you've got a new role that you've actually started taking on recently, and that's one of an author. So tell us a little bit about the latest book and how you got to start writing books.
So it was about 4 years ago, we wrote a book called Seed to Vision, and it was published, and this was pre-COVID, made it out there in bookstores and did pretty good. And so we started, that book was more focused on some nuts and bolts of how to take a God-given seed and pursue a vision in your life. So, but we were starting to lay out the skeleton for the next book. What's it going to look like? And we realized that we wanted to write a book about the ranch itself. How did it get started? What's the storyline going to be? And we, and when I say we, me and one other board member, started sitting down maybe once a month and just trying to storyboard this thing out. So we ended up writing a book over the last 2 years during COVID, and it just came out. It's published on Amazon. It's called Ranch Boys, and it's pretty easy to find. I mean, Ranch Boys. And
that's out and available now for purchase?
It is. It is, and it's available paper, and it's available Kindle.
And what does this book kind of talk about?
It covers three storylines. It covers my journey to the ranch, and it covers two boys' journey to the ranch, and it's kind of written like a almost on a liking it like a Hallmark story. You know, it's kind of written in a fictional tone, but it's all factual. Like the events that are in the book are factual,
so it has a narrative kind of flowing through it as well,
right? So
it makes it not such a dry read.
Yeah, I hope it's not a dry read.
Yeah, right. Well, a lot of times when it's just facts and figures and this and that, but when it has that narrative content, you know, it makes it a much easier thing to read through. So
yeah, so there's three storylines, and it's mine and then two boys, and it bounces from each one of our journeys, and eventually we all cross paths at the ranch. But we realize, you know, once we're there and we're all together, me being the director and these kids being students, but our journeys weren't that much different. And we're all kind of ranch boys at heart. We all needed a savior. We all needed God to save us. And these kids, their journey was a lot harder than mine, I can tell you that. But you'll see when you read it. It's the cool thing about when we wrote this book, we're one of the boys that we're covering is a boy named Anthony. And in his story from being removed from his biological home during a police raid to being placed in the foster care again and again and again, and some of the foster homes not being very safe, his accounts, his memory of things happening, to the point where he's eventually adopted and placed at the ranch by an adoptive family. And what we didn't even realize when we were writing this book and we wrapped it up, that he would eventually become our son, my wife and I's son. So his adoption situation fell apart about a year and a half ago, about the time we had already wrapped up the storyline of this book and we were into the editing process. And my wife and I, he was about to get sucked back into the foster system, and we moved in and grabbed this young man, and we weren't going to let that happen. So he is now our son.
Talk about a plot twist, yeah, man. Right. I know.
We're like writing a story about this young man, and then he ends up becoming my son. So,
well, it sounds like an absolutely terrific book and another great way that you can help support the ranch. You're going to read books anyway. You may as well read one that's inspiring like this and help support a local cause in this way. So that sounds great. Look for it on Amazon and, I guess, Barnes & Noble, all your typical outlets.
Right now, it's just Amazon. The whole publishing world has changed, so we ended up self-publishing this one.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, that's a whole nother story. But we went back to the same publishing company from our first book, and it was, I think the publishing world's trying to get back on its feet too. So we just decided to self-publish this one and roll it out.
And what's the name of the book again?
Ranch Boys. Ranch Boys.
Ranch Boys.
We'll be sure to check it out.
Yep.
So ultimately, the best portal is to look at the website and get the contact information and just reach out and say, hey, I'm willing to come alongside.
Just call
and,
the number.
Call the number right there. Well, that's fantastic. I tell you, I've certainly had a great time getting an opportunity to tell you. And here's the thing at the end of the day. How do you change the world? You change it one life at a time. I mean, that's exactly what you guys are doing. And it's absolutely inspiring. Hopefully, everybody that listens to this will want to get involved to some degree and get out there and lend a hand. So, from my side, I would say thank you very much for coming in and talking to us today and telling us your story.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Thank you, guys.